This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only.
And welcome to episode 54 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And this morning, we will be covering season 3, episode 7 of Star Trek Discovery, titled Unification 3. But before we get started, we have to correct a couple of gross mistakes from last week as we uncover some additional feedback for last week's episode, Season 3, Episode 6, titled Scavengers. So let's open hailing frequencies. Okay, so we actually missed not just one, but two voicemails last week. Two of them.
Two! So sorry!
Yeah. So the first is from our good friend, LT from NC. So let's play that.
Well, hello, Discovery Podcast. It's LT with the voicemail. Now, I included several things in my yeses, several things in my hold your horses, only because there's nothing that really stood out as a no. I just had some questions about how strong this episode was in comparison to the strength of everything we've seen prior to this episode in the season. I will still say that season 3 has come out swinging stronger and harder than even season 2 did. Well above what we saw in season 1. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that this episode was just not quite up to the rest of them, by my opinion. All that's notated in my written comments. Just want to throw that out there. And my one concern is they're running out of runway. You know, they're only got a few episodes left this season, and I'm just afraid we're going to run into a situation where we have a cliffhanger, and I don't know if I'm braced for some big cliffhanger, because even with the jump to the future, it was still tied up in a nice bow. The storyline had a completion, and I don't know if they get it done in 3 episodes. That is my only concern with the season thus far. Looking forward to the podcast. Love you guys, and I will see you around.
Well, thank you so much, LT from NC, for your voicemail. And it's been good to hear from you. And of course, LT is my co-host on the Walking Dead Talk Through when I'm on there. And I want to just let you know, you were worried about them running out of runway, and I didn't catch this until now, but you thought that there was only 3 episodes left. Well, thankfully, I can tell you that is incorrect.
Yeah.
Incorrect.
Thankfully, there are 13 episodes this season, so...
Yes.
Yes, so you don't have to worry.
We're only a little over halfway through now. So there.
Yes, we still have, after this episode, we still have 6 episodes left. So, and I think that they, with getting that data from SB19, I think they are... they'll be a lot further next episode as to, you know, the reasons for the burn and that. So I think, I think we're going to be good. So I will agree with you, however, about last episode, especially when you compare it to this episode. Last episode was not as good as the rest. I'd say it was probably the weakest of episodes so far. Although maybe, I don't know, I'd say 4, 5, and 6 are the weakest of the 7 we've seen. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. Mainly because of reasons I outlined last week about the whole one step forward, two steps back feeling I keep getting. But fortunately, I feel like that was resolved.
Yeah.
This episode. So, yeah.
Yep, I agree. Anything else you want to offer from LT's feedback?
No, just that I think last episode I would have also been concerned that we would run out of runway, even though we had more episodes than LT thought. But after this week, I feel like we might not. But I don't know, because it looks like based on scenes from next week, we might not be moving as forward as we thought with the burn. So I don't know.
Okay.
We'll see.
We shall see. All right. So our second voicemail from last week that we didn't play, we're really sorry about that. I don't know how they slipped through.
I'm blaming COVID.
Yeah.
That's my excuse for everything this year. Just blame COVID.
All right. Edwin from Arizona, you are next.
Hello, Brian, Ruthie, and Star Trek fans. This is Edwin from Arizona. I just want to send a feedback. I really enjoyed this episode, and it brings up a lot more questions. My quick question is it possible that they didn't travel into the future? Maybe the future, but another universe, maybe? And being kind of what they seem? Yeah. I want to know what you think about that theory. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you guys again. All right, bye.
Well, thank you, Edwin, for your voicemail. And again, sorry about not playing it. I don't know. I tend to think that after this week, it being an alternate future, I think is less likely. So we had some pretty hardcore tie-ins to Spock and even Picard getting a mention. So I would think not. What do you think?
I don't think that they're in an alternate timeline, but that is an interesting theory that, I mean, given the multiverse theory, it could be, we already know that we do have a multiverse in the Star Trek universe based on the Terran universe. So,
yeah,
I mean, it could be, it's entirely possible. However, it would be so similar to the Prime Universe, as we call it, as to be really negligible in its differences. So,
And you could also run into the issue with the, you have multiple universes, you have multiple timelines.
Yeah. But I think, it's confusing, but aren't multiple timelines really multiple universes? Because every time you diverge, that's another universe.
Yeah, I kind of think so.
Unless you, it's based on, the multiverse theory is based on choices that we make diverge and lead us into different decisions, which lead us into different decisions, which create different realities, so to speak,
yep,
which are different universes, which there could be infinite universes.
Well, speaking of that, I always think of the parallels, the TNG episode where Lieutenant, I believe it is, Crusher says, "Captain, we are receiving 285,000 hails."
Yeah, exactly. and this concept isn't new to Star Trek. It appears in many and many other science fiction shows. So most notably for me anyway, that I can think of off the top of my head, it's in Stargate SG-1. They have different universes there. Different things have happened. Things are terrible in one place, not so terrible in another place. It also happens in fantasy shows that involve time travel, like The Magicians. They had...
And who could forget Sliders?
Of course, Sliders.
Yeah.
Based entirely on the multiverse theory. So it's, you know, it's not new. I think you can collapse a specific universe / timeline by undoing what you maybe did to make it change, to make the change. But it kind of seems like these two would be so similar as to be not really different. So
yeah. Possible, but I would say highly unlikely at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Okay. We also got some written feedback from Clint from Indianapolis. He says, one comment on last week's episode, Scavengers. Why should a commanding officer automatically take a recommendation from a subordinate to their superior officer? Riker and Shelby butted heads in TNG, best of both worlds, because she did a runaround on him. A superior officer takes in the information and forms his recommendation to give to their superior. They are not a go-between communicator from the crew to the higher-ranking decision-making officers. I would be interested in LT's take and perspective on this. Well, we don't have LT's take and perspective, but we do have mine. And I think that the problem was that Shelby stepped over the chain of command instead of going through it. Like, Riker did present the idea to Picard that Shelby presented. But then Shelby, you know, thinking that he didn't, just tried to sidestep him and go directly. And I think that was the end around or runaround.
I think also because she didn't feel, if I remember correctly, she didn't feel like he really thought she had a great idea.
Yeah.
So she probably thought that he maybe didn't present it the best way that she could.
Yeah, maybe.
But that's not really her place.
Right.
But I'm not sure what exactly this particular comment about a commanding officer automatically taking a recommendation from a subordinate to their superior is referring to in Scavengers.
I know what it's from. It's basically Burnham, you know, Saru taking the idea to Vance of Burnham's.
Because Vance said that he should have.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of knowing or part of being a good captain is knowing when you should and when you shouldn't take a recommendation from a subordinate to a superior officer.
Yeah.
And clearly Vance thought that he should have. And he also thought that he should have known that this was one of those instances. Because, I mean, you're right. You don't always have to take a recommendation from a subordinate to your superior. That's part of your job as a commanding officer is to know when to do such a thing. And I guess that's part of the reason why Saru was also contrite in this episode, because he was getting the hang of, you know, figuring out that aspect of it, I guess. I mean, he is still a very new captain, and there are nuances between being in charge and being an actual captain in a structure, you know, an organization that has a structure and a, what's the word I'm thinking of? Code and, hang on a second. I wrote it down earlier somewhere else. They have, what's the word I'm thinking of? Protocols.
Yes.
There are protocols that they have to follow, and being in charge is different from being a captain, I think, because of that. And I will talk more about that later.
All right. Let's move on to
as it relates to this episode, I should say.
Let's move on to feedback from last week's podcast. Ruthie, why don't you take the first one?
All righty. Wes from Minnesota says, I hope you and Ruthie never got the wrong impression that I hated the kissy scene in this episode between Michael and Book. It just felt weird and out of place, hence why I said this felt like Trip and T'Pol. I guess I should have been more specific in my no for this week. Hopefully the relationship between these two grows on me, but for right now it feels forced, like Burnham has got to have a relationship with someone or else. I don't think that we thought that you hated it necessarily. I just think that we don't feel that way. At least I don't feel that way. Speaking for myself, I don't feel that way. It does not feel forced to me. And I understand the comparison because, yeah, I do think that the Trip and T'Pol relationship did feel forced. As in, we've got two beautiful single people. Let's throw them together. Whereas if they had, and I know I said this before, if they had given us hints throughout rather than just suddenly there's interest, then maybe it would have felt more believable. Speaking about Trip and T'Pol, that is. But I don't know. I didn't hate it. And I didn't. It didn't feel forced to me. And it's not a no for me. So there.
There you go.
But I don't think that you hated it.
I did.
That wasn't my impression. Did you?
No.
Well, I mean,
no.
I don't. And it's okay if you do hate it. I just don't.
All right. Next is from Jeff X-Force 11. And he says, FYI, Book's transforming ship has been in the opening credits this season. We just didn't pick up on it yet. Well, I'll say I noticed it, but I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Like, and for that matter, I wasn't sure if what we were seeing was actually his ship transforming. It just seemed to be put into place like so many of the other things that are part of the credits.
Right. It seemed like a part of the credits thing. I mean, I think I saw that too, but being in the credits and seeing it in action are two completely different things.
Yes. I agree.
All right. Next, we have Will from SoCal, who says, I have not heard anyone mention this, but Star Trek Discovery was originally a science vessel. With the new retro upgrades for the 32nd century, are they still a science vessel? When you say no one mentioned it, do you mean no one on the show? Because I'm pretty sure we talked about it being a science vessel. And I thought that they had said that they were a science vessel on this season anyway, previously.
Yeah, I think so too.
But as to whether or not they're still a science vessel after the retrofits is anybody's guess, I suppose. And I would assume that that doesn't change. But maybe that's a wrong assumption. I don't know. Because, I mean, it's a retrofit doesn't change the core. It just adds some bells and whistles. So,
yeah,
it's not. I mean, the Federation hasn't really had. I mean, they have like exploration ships and people movers and science vessels, but they don't really make warships unless they're going to war.
Right.
So.
But the only example that we have for something like that would have been the Defiant.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just thinking. The Defiant is the only thing I can think of because it was not built for comfort. They stated it several times.
Yeah. I always loved that ship.
Yeah. Next.
Mike from Arizona says, Ruthie's back. Yay. And then he says, yay. Picture Kermit the Frog excitedly running back and forth across the stage.
That's funny. Thanks, Mike.
And
all right. Finally, we have Ken from Chicago. The episode of At Star Trek TTM, which features the return of Ruthie. Whoops, wrong verse. I'm not quite sure what that means, but okay.
Return of the Jedi.
I guess. And if you're wondering if that's how I spell my name, that is how I spell my name. I don't know why I'm talking like this, but it came out that way. Yes, that's how I spell my name, if that's what those parentheses around the E mean, just in case you're wondering. Never with a Y, ever. All right, he goes on to say, by the way, hashtag Star Trek Discoveries, quote, die trying title is a reference to a phrase that you will accomplish X despite great odds against, or die trying. What's-His-Face was going to keep trying to save his family or die trying. I'm not sure if What's-His-Face is a person in the show or if that's just a general example, like an example of, you know, so-and-so was going to do this or die trying. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either.
The show, you will have to tell us who What's-His-Face is. If not, very good. Also, the hashtag USS Discovery crew was going to prove their worth together a millennium in the future to hashtag Starfleet despite great odds against or die trying. All right, I can see that. Everyone raise your hand if when hashtag Starfleet issued the command to erase all records of the USS Discovery and her mission to travel a millennium into the future, you think hashtag Section 31 actually complied. Hashtag hint. Hashtag as if. And he has the, I don't know what that is, the thinking emoji with the hand on the chin. Hand or the thumb and forefinger on the chin and then the Spock emoji or the live long and prosper emoji.
Yeah.
And no, I guess I don't think that they complied.
No. I agree. All right. And last, he says, also at Sooner Girl and at Brian J. Melosh, make a number of requests that might be fulfilled in subsequent episodes. Hashtag, they're listening. Thumbs up emoji.
Rolling on the floor laughing.
Rolling on the floor laughing my ass off emoji.
It could just be ROFL. It doesn't have to be ROFLMAO.
And then he says, BTW, Brian, you were right. The scene was in the first of the hashtag Adventurous movies.
What?
Thumbs up emoji.
What? What is this?
Yeah. Probably been a few episodes, so I don't know what. I think he's talking to something that I said in the Die Trying. But I'm not sure now what it was. So, okay, so now we get to discussion of this week's episode, Season 3, Episode 7, titled Unification 3. It is written by Kirsten Beyer and directed by John Dudkowski. And the description from CBS.com is as follows. While grappling with the fallout of her recent actions and what her future might hold, Burnham agrees to represent the Federation in an intense debate about the release of politically sensitive but highly valuable Byrd data. That is TVPG with no star date given, and it had the air date of 11/25/2020. So, as always, actually came out on the 26th for every time zone except Pacific. I don't know exactly when it was released this time. I was a little tardy and started watching it at 11:26 p.m. Pacific this week. So it had a
run. I do not stay up that late to watch it because there's no way I would remember anything. As we have previously stated, I am not the night person in this relationship.
It had a runtime of 50 minutes, 31 seconds. So, Ruthie, how would you rate Unification 3?
I really liked this episode, and I think I have questions still. Honestly, I'm going to give this 9.5 chronic overachievers.
Yep. I am going to give it, to take the words of the Romulo Vulcans, 9.9, it's a big ask.
That's an understatement, apparently. Yeah,
because as some people said, that is kind of a modern thing to say, not necessarily something that you would think would last, you know, 1,000+ years into our future.
Yeah, it's also not necessarily a Vulcan saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a Romulan saying. Or a Romulo Vulcan saying.
I would agree on all parts. Okay, so we have listener ratings. Ruthie, why don't you start?
All right, Comic Geek Kev says, another great episode. I give it 9.5 out of 10 Navarran gongs.
Yep, and Navar was actually something that came out of an old novel where I guess that was like an ancient name of Vulcan. So, yeah.
I'm wondering that.
Yeah. So that was a deep, 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 deep cut. Edwin from Arizona didn't seem to like it as much as some of the other people that gave us a rating. He says, 7.9, wow, some name drops and cameo.
Yeah, or he has a different rating system than the rest of us.
True.
Rick from Cleveland says, a near perfect episode for me. I rate it 9.999 out of 10 tears of pure joy from seeing Leonard Nimoy in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Jeff, X-Force 11, says, 9 sword-wielding advocate mothers.
Nice. Brian from Colorado says, I rate Season 3, Episode 7, Unification 3, a perfect 10 out of 10. This is by far my favorite episode of Discovery and of all of New Trek to date.
Wes from Minnesota says, this episode really nailed it. Kirsten Beyer took elements from both Jerry Taylor and Michael Piller, the writers of the original Unification two-parter, and ran with it. This felt right and felt like it truly began in the franchise. I give Unification 3 11 Romulo Vulcans out of 10. It deserves another excessive number than the max. I freaking love it.
All right. LT from NC says a non-arbitrary 9 out of 10. Unexpected absolute candors. Boy, it sure was.
Mike from Arizona says, I'm giving this episode, Unification 3, a 9.5 endearing messianic complexes out of 10.
That was funny. That was good stuff.
Okay, so that is it for our listener ratings, and let's move on to yeses.
Yes! Yeah.
Comic Geek Kev says, Mama Burnham. Mama Burnham. And then you stole one from me, actually, Comic Geek Kev. The USS Yelchin is, I assume, a reference to Anton Yelchin from the new Star Trek movies. It's pretty cool that they have a story device that lets them honor various people, real life, and characters in the naming of ships. Yeah.
That is pretty cool.
References.
And I would say, yes, that probably is what that is.
Yeah, I most certainly agree that it is. References to the original Unification TNG episodes and a Nimoy sighting were great. Brings to mind so many things that were in Discovery's future, but are now in their past and could be referenced. And a reference to Absolute Candor and Kuat Melat and their lost causes was nice when dealing with Romulans. Yeah, it was.
Agreed.
When they mentioned Kuat Melat, I was like, oh my God, Kuat Melat.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool too. I was like, what? But it makes perfect sense that they would be the, I guess, the buffer, if you will, or the,
yeah,
the mortar that binds the bricks together of the Romulans and Vulcans, since, as they said, their whole society is very lie-based.
Yeah.
So it would be really hard to trust people who lie, like breathing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll say something of mine here that I thought it was brilliant how they kind of weaved the Varan culture around. You had your Vulcans, which were, like, seemingly ultra-Vulcan. You had your Romulans, which were, you know, the usual Romulans. And then you had Romulo-Vulcans. So, one said, I guess, we're trying to fuse the two together.
Well, I would assume that they are people who would be descended from both.
Right.
You know?
Right.
People who, because I mean, it's been 100 years, so there are descendants.
Well, it doesn't they don't actually indicate when the merging of the cultures happened. We know it happened beyond, you know, Spock and Picard's day. It could have been like 28th century or something like that. So in that case, if it was way before the bird, and we actually know it was before the bird because they were doing, you know, the experiments, whatever. So
it was before the burn because they were doing experience and the Romulans wanted to stay in the Federation, but the Vulcans wanted to bounce.
Right.
So, and they left 100 years ago. So.
Yeah. And how ironic that the Romulans wanted to stay in the Federation and the Vulcans did not.
Yeah, that's.
That's just. Yeah. It's funny how, you know. I can totally see how that happens because, you know, we've seen that in politics for one thing. We'll see one party, which was left, shift to right and vice versa. So that kind of thing could happen over time.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't know. I have misgivings about certain things, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later.
Okay.
But anyway, we don't know exactly when they joined. It makes sense that since we're in this prime universe and the Romulans are homeless, that eventually, because we know from the movies, the Kelvin universe movies, Spock died trying to save Romulus.
Yeah.
So, and he came from the prime universe trying to save Romulus.
Right.
So they know, I think they know his efforts in the prime universe. So it's possible that, you know, it blew up. All that happened, supernova, yada, yada, yada. It's possible that when they were homeless and in the intervening time in Picard, that maybe overtures were made and this, that, and the other. And eventually, maybe it happened sooner after the Picard timeline than we think.
And let's not forget that in the very first Kelvin timeline movie, Star Trek 2009, Vulcan was blown up by the Nero character who had come back in time. You know,
right.
So there would be no Devar. That's
another reason how we know that this is not in the Kelvin universe, because there's no Vulcan.
Right.
No Vulcan to turn into Devar.
Right. So that's like a deciding factor above all others, that you can't have it be in that timeline because there is no Devar to come to. So, you know, he has one more. Yes. He says, I think making Tilly acting first officer is satisfactory for now. Saru's reasoning is hard to argue with, but I'm sure viewers will. It will be interesting to see where they go from here. I'm just not sure they've written enough confidence into her at this point. Yes, she's brilliant, etc., but that's not all there is to command. The first reaction of Stamets was pretty Stamets-y, but it was nice to see the bridge crew support her at the end. Yeah, I don't know. This is where the show gets the point one deduction for me, because I just don't get it.
These are the deductions for me as well.
Yeah.
Mostly because his reasoning is very easy to argue with, actually. And I will in my nose.
All right. That's it for Common Key Kev.
All right. Next, we have Rick from Cleveland, who says, yes, for Michael's mother making her way to Navarre. How perfect that they tied in the Co-op Milot in that way. Yes, for tying up Michael's discomfort with her place in this future and Starfleet. That was an awkward subplot, and hopefully she now knows her place. I agree. I also feel like this situation, whatever you want to call it, is resolved, and I like that because I was tired of the yo-yo motion going on. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, and I agree with you. I hope that it is as well.
Yeah, please let it be. Yes, for how they handled Tilly taking on the role of first officer. The writers did it right, acknowledging that the rank does not fit, but using the bridge crew to help her get past the awkwardness of it all. Yes, for the dynamic between the Vulcans and Romulans. It was interesting that they seem to have made the Vulcans more secretive and the Romulans more open. I would love to see more of what is behind this flip in dynamic. Yeah, that is true. I think I'm not sure that it's necessarily that the Romulans wanted to be more open. He seemed more focused on the whole they can prove it wasn't us thing. Not let's share the data for sharing sake, but more like it will benefit us if we prove that this was not us kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, I think, yeah, they're not being as secretive, but I still feel like that's sort of Romulan because it'll benefit them. It's not just being open for the sake of that. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Wes from Minnesota is next. He says, the Nimoy cameo from Unification 2. It was like a holy cow. It was like a breath of fresh air hearing Nimoy's voice in a Star Trek production for the first time in 7 years. His last appearance was in Into Darkness. The Quorum, what can I say? This was amazingly acted. So I think Saru, when he feels good enough to do it, he will step down as captain of the Discovery to continue diplomatic relations with Navarre. But I can see that happening in a season or two. Finally, the scene with the bridge crew giving the thumbs up to Tilly for her being acting first officer of the Discovery. Oh, did I enjoy the tie-in to Picard?
I enjoyed it as well.
Yep.
I'm glad that they picked something good from that first disappointing season of Picard to tie in. Oh my goodness. All right, next we have Brian from Colorado, who says, Spock's TNG unification efforts pay off 29 years after original airing. Plus, we can say with absolute certainty that this is the Prime Universe because Vulcan is still there. Yes, we can.
Yes.
I liked the Kowat Milat tie-in to the Picard series and book. The empathy expressed by the new Vulcan-Romulan president showed very good acting / casting. I agree. I enjoyed her performance very much.
Yeah, I thought she was good.
Tilly growing into the opportunity to be acting first officer was endearing too.
LT from NC is next. He says, well, we know where Mom Burnham landed. Yeah. I'm not really sure how. But anyway, the Picard tie-ins with the Kowat Milat and the Romulans. The threads back to TNG's unification episode. Yeah, I'm Brian when I saw Nimoy. And Brian also Brian when he saw Nimoy.
So did Ruthie.
Oh, well, that's nice. I love seeing Navarre Vulcan, and I'd love to get the why as to the name change. I don't know, just to tie it into something old. The teaser, while not part of the episode, it made me excited for next week.
Mm.
And thank you for not going into detail about the spoiler, because some people get all kind of worked up about that giving details.
Yeah. As far as where Gabrielle Burnham landed, she said she landed on Esau 4 again.
Right.
So where exactly is Esau 4 and what is it? Is this the Kowat Milat home base?
No. Esau 4 is where they tried to capture Gabrielle Burnham. Remember that had the toxic environment there, which makes you wonder, like, okay, well, how did she land there? I thought that the area was toxic.
I thought it snapped her back to where she was before.
Well, that's what we would have thought, but it didn't.
Well, she also wasn't wearing the suit, so I wasn't quite sure how right. She got snapped back in the first place. But at least why would they be there on Esau 4? And who would have found her? I guess they cleaned up the toxins or whatever.
Maybe.
So maybe the Kowat Milat are stationed all over?
Yeah, maybe they terraformed it and it didn't have maybe. That. Yeah.
I mean, since the entire Romulan system, whatever, got blowed up real good. Who knows? But yeah, I guess that's where she landed, which I don't really know. I mean, so Terra Elysium was her home base previously?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know why she didn't snap back to Terra Elysium then. Maybe because she wasn't wearing the suit and that's the last place that the suit was. I don't know. Time travel makes my head hurt, even though I love it.
Probably right. Because Terra Elysium, if they had used Terra Elysium, they probably would have had to pay some royalty to the previous showrunners.
Mm.
In all honesty, that's kind of how some things work sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to do that. Not if you don't have to. It's, anyway, whatever. All right. Next up, we have Mike from Arizona, who says, Book and Michael sitting in a sale. K-I-S-S. Okay, it doesn't rhyme, but it's good to see her having a healthy connection. That was cute.
Just to semi-correct myself, they aren't written or they aren't listed in the episode's description for that, the story or teleplay. That was Akiva Goldsman and Sean Cochran wrote the story based or and a teleplay, Vaughn Wilmot and Sean Cochran. So I know Sean Cochran, I believe, is still involved because he had credits for Die Trying, but obviously, and I know Akiva Goldsman's still in the family here. Don't know about Vaughn Wilmot, though. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I mean, having Gabrielle Burnham there anyway would make it so not just Terra Elysium.
Right.
Because technically she started in last season. So there you go. All right. Going on with Mike. Tilly getting the responsibility of being acting number one and receiving support from the crew. The USS Yelchin. Co-op Milat tie-in. Mention of Admiral Jean-Luc Picard. Nimoy cameo gave me goosebumps. One of four. I mean, Michael's birth mom to the emotional rescue. Finally, we got an answer to whether she is alive or not. Looks like we have hollow suites. Yeah, I guess so. I guess that was one of the retrofits, maybe. The program, maybe it's programmable matter suites instead of hollow suites. Who knows? Anyway. The programmable matter floor making a return appearance, which should be in the opening credits too. Yeah, I can see that.
Cool. So that's it for our yeses. So, Ruthie, what do you have for yeses?
I don't really have that much that hasn't been mentioned already. I loved the Leonard Nimoy. That was a surprise. And I enjoyed Burnham watching him. And I really, really liked the book proclamation that they were both chronic overachievers.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
So true.
It's true. I'll just say, First Officer Tilly, I nailed it. I don't get it, but I nailed it. I did say that, so I will give myself credit.
Yeah. I like the way they transport in while they're walking. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And then, of course, it was funny when the Quat Milat were mentioned. I was like, oh my God. And then, Mom?
Yeah, I was not expecting to see her again, and especially not in that capacity. But I was like, whoa, that's so cool. So, yeah, that was definitely a yes for me.
Would have been the position that I would have expected her to be in. So,
right. Honestly, after so many episodes, I kind of thought, well, okay, I mean, I sort of forgot about her. Yeah, I want to know where her mom is, but I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, maybe we'll get to that eventually. It's not on my radar. And then suddenly, boom, there it is. So, yeah, that was cool.
But other than that, everything I had down was already said. So let's move on to our nose.
I love that kaboom at the end. Kaboom.
Let's see. Wes from Minnesota. He says, about Tilly, I honestly didn't expect Saru to pick her. She's a freaking ensign, for goodness sake. Giving her the position of first officer would make Ensign Harry Kim cringe. Ha! it just felt a little off. I do see why Saru did choose her over, like, Nielsen or anyone else.
I don't. And this is a huge no for me. Saru offering her acting first officer does not make any sense whatsoever. I'm especially because she's an ensign who never completed the command training program. How can she be promoted to first officer, a position that would require her to take over should the captain be incapacitated?
True.
So not only is she responsible for lives, but as I stated earlier, there are protocols that she surely would have learned in the command training program. So this is not, I mean, jump, I'm sorry, but handling, you know, her life experience, while yes, that does make her experienced in the realm of I have life experience, so maybe a little bit more experienced than a normal ensign would be, because of, you know, they jumped to the Terran universe and then they jumped into the future. And yeah, that's not something that normally ensigns go through. But that does not mean that she is qualified to be acting first officer. It's a huge no for me. A huge no. And frankly, I don't understand why everybody else thinks it's okay. It's like they're not in Starfleet at all anymore, honestly, because there are protocols and ranks for a reason. They're in that. I can't even speak. An organization that large can't just fly by the seat of its pants willy-nilly. We already have an inexperienced captain. So I don't understand why they would also doubly throw in an inexperienced ensign as first officer. That just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I agree. Yes, she's brilliant, etc. But no, just no.
What you said. I mean, I don't think I really have anything extra to offer. I think I have less of a problem with it than you do, but this is like, you know, this is like saying that K2 is, the second largest mountain in the world. It's still a pretty frickin' big mountain.
Yeah. it's like saying I've watched a lot of medical dramas. I think I could be a surgeon.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me right now?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I stayed at a Holiday Inn last night. So, come on. I just want to be like, GTFO with that crap. And I had a feeling that you were going to be right when you said that he was going to make her the first officer. But I was like, why would they ever do that? I didn't like it when he went to confide in her. And they set that precedent by doing that. They set us up for this, which is just ridiculous. Anyway. It's dumb. Totally dumb.
You won't get any
All right.
disagreement from me. It's strange one.
I'm glad that all of you guys like it, but I don't understand why you do.
I think that's where I'm a little different than you. I like it, but it doesn't make sense to me. Like that's where I only give it a 0.1 deduction, where you give it a 0.5. That it's like it makes
can't like things that don't make sense, I guess. Like if they don't make sense to me, there's no way I could like it. I like her as a character. I think she's great. I think that one day she would be a great leader, but I feel like this is taking way too many massive leaps. The only time something such as this could be appropriate is in a battlefield situation when there is no one else who could take that position over an instantly.
Right.
That's the only time.
It seems very highly questionable.
While I was never in the military myself, I was married to the military for 3 years, and I guess I picked up some stuff.
It just seems weird to me. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Brian from Colorado says, I didn't understand why Burnham's mother was Co-op Milot.
I didn't either.
I didn't either, but that didn't not make sense to me. So I didn't dislike it.
It made more sense than Tilly to be, but
I can understand it because they found her and she was also lost. So they gave her a purpose.
Yeah.
Maybe she liked the way that, I guess, their way of life, so to speak, the way of absolute candor and such things. So it made sense to me that she, after being rudderless, basically, that she would, find her way to that. So, yeah.
Kamiki Kev is next. He says, Mama Burnham, WTF, maybe a little heads up on your strategy next time. Yeah, I mean, it did come out of left field, but I didn't have that much of a problem with it. It'd be kind of a hold your horses for me, but I didn't have a problem with it like we already described.
Yeah, it's not a no for me. I don't mind being that surprised, I guess. I like it. Sometimes. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's not. In this instance, it was good.
So yeah. A race of beings devoted to logic. You would think fractions of microseconds would be right up their alley.
Yes. You would think that, wouldn't you? You would think that that's not something that they would just dismiss out of hand for political and socioeconomic, cultural, sociocultural, whatever reasons.
And maybe that's why, what was her name, the president?
Tarina.
Maybe that's why she ended up giving the data over.
Yeah, maybe so.
We are more than halfway through the season. I think having the shorter season is fine and keeps the story tight and moving along. I just wish it wasn't so long between seasons. Well, yeah, it's worth saying that all three of the seasons were supposed to be 13-episode seasons, but season one got the two episodes added. Like, I think those last two were supposed to be not part of the season. I think it was supposed to end with them ending with the Mirror Universe originally. But then they added the last two episodes to end the war. And then they ended up needing an extra episode in season two, I think because the finale was too long to do in a single episode. So they were all supposed to be 13 episodes. And thankfully, LT, not 10 episodes.
Yeah.
So that's Picard. Picard's a 10-episode show, as is Lower Decks, but Discovery's a 13. So.
Right.
And they do consider it the flagship show.
So there you go, of the new stuff.
And that's it for him.
All right. Next, we have Mike from Arizona, who says, no, Jet! She should have been in on the Tilly promotion support party.
Yes, I agree with that.
I agree with that, too. It's unfortunate that couldn't be the case. All right. No acknowledgement by any other crew member of Michael's mother's existence. No look at WTF. No look of WTF on Saru's face. No debrief of her. Yeah, it's, true. Fair points. Michael letting her mom stay in Navarre. I think they got some serious attachment issues.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm letting you. I kind of got that vibe as well,
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, but I didn't really feel like that. Let's talk about this for a minute. Every interaction that Michael's had with her mom has been, since she discovered she was still alive, has been incredibly brief and fraught.
Right.
So, to me, it was kind of more along the line of, oh, wow. Okay, yeah, I guess it makes sense that you're staying, even though I'm disappointed. you do have your life going on right now. So, okay. That's kind of how I took it.
Yeah.
Not like, okay, I'm letting you stay, but more like, oh, gee, I wanted more time with you.
Mm.
But then her mom ends with, you always know where to find me. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's how I took that. All right. They don't have a clue that they should have jumped at the edge of Vulcan system since they were no longer a member of the Federation. That does seem kind of, maybe they shouldn't have shown up right at the doorstep. Like maybe they should have hollered from a little ways off. Who briefed Discovery's crew on how to tread diplomatically? Have they never heard of boundaries? Agreed. You're not wrong.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
All right. After making such a good argument against Michael's request, the president easily hands over the data based on Michael expressing one personal revelation. They point out how they were willing to be manipulated by the Federation and did not ask for more of a gesture from them. Where were the diplomatic corps and why weren't they playing a more visible role here? It just wasn't realistic enough of an act of trust for me to believe.
I mean, Vance mentioned the diplomatic corps, but we didn't see any of them tag along.
At all.
Right.
He did mention it. He said that they were going, so they should have been there.
Maybe they were in the crowd, which...
Maybe, but I feel like they should have said, hey, here's the diplomatic corps, or at least made introductions to Tarina.
Right.
I mean, that seems like that was kind of a gross misstep, but, you know, whatever. I'm not buying the bridge crew and engineering are fully supporting Tilly's promotion. Me neither. That seems...
Unless she reprimands them or something and they just were like, well, screw it. You're an ensign.
You can't boss me.
Yeah, you can't boss me. So it's easily dismissible. I don't know. That's my main... unless she gets a promotion out of this, like an actual promotion... Then I would have less trouble with it, but still have trouble with it.
Mm. Yeah. Still no new uniforms? Yeah, bro. I don't think we're going to get that this time around.
Yeah. Maybe next season.
It does not make sense. You are absolutely correct. But at this point in time, it doesn't make sense to have them get them as an afterthought. They should have gotten them with the retrofit. So
right.
That was the moment they missed it.
They didn't have the budget to switch out the uniforms.
I guess. They just had the budget to make Admiral Vance's and the three prototypes.
Yeah.
Or maybe four, whatever. Yeah, I don't know, man. A complete omission of the implications of the detached nacelle's first run. We need explanations, people. Well, technically, they didn't use the nacelles. They used the spore drive, so... Yeah,
exactly. Although we did see a much different spin than what we used to see.
Did we?
Yeah, it was... It kind of lit up in a different way, and so it wasn't... There was still a spin, but it was less of a spin, I guess.
I have no idea what you're talking about. It looked exactly the same to me. The only difference I noticed was them emerging from the Federation shieldy place, whatever. So they came out of, like, they came, it looked like it was part of the jump, but it wasn't because they came out of the cloaked area or what have you.
Yeah.
So there was like little crackly. And then they did the spinny thing. I have no reason to believe that they would ever change that graphic ever because you could just use it over and over and over again without having to do anything to it. Just plug and play.
Yeah.
Unless like, oh, there's something wrong with the spore drive, so we need to change the thing like they did when they landed halfway in mycelial space.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. So that's it for listener nose. What do you have for nose?
Well, I expressed my major no already quite vociferously and vehemently, I might add. Let me think. Nope. I think I've already given out my no.
My big thing is, although that it was a very cool, very, you know, steeped in lore episode, and the fact that it's an example of what you can do with a bottle episode, because this one, textbook bottle episode, because all the scenes were on Discovery themselves. Why was that whole thing on Discovery? Why didn't they go down to Navarre for that hearing, or
to Kellen Krett?
Yeah. So it was kind of, I was guessing it was done for budget, but other than that, it just seemed a little strange choice of where to hold the thing. So can't remember the name of it right off the top of my head. I'm looking.
To Kellen Krett.
To Kellen Krett. Thank you. Yeah. Beyond that, we've already kind of mentioned my nose. So I think with that, let's move on to Hold Your Horses.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the hell? What the hell? Hold your horses.
We're saying we are closer to a Captain Tilly than we have ever been before.
Yeah, sure. All right. First, we have Comic Geek Kev, who says your horses aren't good enough.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's a good one. I like that. I would like to have seen Burnham and Tilly actually address Tilly telling Saru that he needed to go to Vance about her insubordination. They spoke, but I don't feel like that was specifically about that. Yes, Tilly said she was put in a bad situation, but I don't think they went far enough. I get what you're saying, but I sort of guess I assume that was done off screen, maybe. Like, I mean, I knew that Tilly wouldn't dissemble when it came to that, but I don't know. I don't know why she necessarily needs to say outright that she told Saru to tell Admiral Vance anyway. She just acknowledged that she didn't cover for her, which is basically what it boiled down to.
Yeah.
And what she was upset about was being put in the bad situation. Not that she had, I don't think she was upset about telling Saru that he should go to Admiral Vance. I think she was upset that Michael put her in the position that she put her in.
Yeah.
And as she said, it should have been her choice.
Yeah.
To do that. And I mean, it makes sense that Michael wouldn't have said anything to her because, again, she's become accustomed to, I mean, I think people are underestimating the power of this 1 year alone thing. It wasn't just that she was on her own for a year. She was without any ties whatsoever and thought that she might never have any again. She thought that perhaps she would be alone for the rest of her life because she didn't know when the Discovery would ever show up. So as she said previously, I had to let them go. Otherwise, she would be living her life for the rest of her life, expecting them to show up. And then if they never did, that's just setting yourself up for disappointment. And as she said, based on the laws of temporal dynamics, they could show up tomorrow or in 1,000 years. So in order for her to be a whole person, a whole functioning person, she had to move on and find something else to deal with. That's more than just, oh, I was on my own for a year. That was, I thought you all were dead to me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a little different. So she's used to being on her own, doing on her own. And I'm not surprised that she has had so much trouble, I guess, refitting herself into this command structure, I guess, if you will. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But I get what you're saying. They didn't actually address it, and I can see how that would be irritating. Vulcan and Romulan makeup is not always kind. Oh, man. Nor are their hairstyles, but, you know.
No, they're not.
How would Gabrielle know that Burnham would never disrespect Spock? She literally knows Burnham for very little time after Burnham was Spock's sister. That line didn't make any sense to me. She knows because she's watched in all of her jumps back and forth, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. She mentions that last season that she'd been kind of...
She was always there.
Yeah. Which I never quite understood, but...
I didn't either, but she said it, so... I guess we have to agree with it, or not agree with it, but take her word for it. That is a big ask. Doesn't sound very Vulcan or Romulan, but I guess it's the future, so... Yeah. Agreed. I know there has been some speculation / discussion of Burnham maybe leaving Discovery and Starfleet. This episode seems to put that to rest. But I must admit, I wouldn't mind an episode or two more of Discovery instead of Star Trek Burnham. Aw.
I think that you're largely correct about that. It puts it to rest, but I think it still opens her up for like special guest star on Star Trek Section 31, assuming that they're in the same timeline. So.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe. MIA Reno Culber Linus Giorgio. I didn't even see them in the background anywhere, but I may have missed them.
They weren't in the background.
No, they weren't there. They weren't there.
And I agree. I mean, those that you just mentioned, none of them were there in that background, and they should have been. Like, I didn't see any white costumed people, so yeah. Culber definitely wasn't there. And I definitely noticed that Georgia wasn't there, because you would find her in black, and didn't, of course, Reno wasn't there either, and she was absent by her absence. That makes any sense.
She would have been noticeable by her snark.
Yeah.
And Linus wasn't popping in everywhere. I guess they figured out his personal transporter.
Yeah, you should have just popped in.
I might have found that funny, but it was overdone last episode, I thought. I was like, oh my gosh, enough already. But mainly because of, like I said, what they talked about in the ready room. Kind of ruined it for me. But what are you going to do? All right. And he finally, his final, hold your horses, or your horses aren't good enough, is why do alien, quote, alien languages use so many apostrophes? Question mark, question mark, exclamation point, smiley face. I have no idea why they do that, but I think that there are languages on Earth that do that too.
Yeah.
French comes to mind, so I don't know. It's just the way it is, yo.
All right. Rick from Cleveland is next. He says, my hold your horses, the bit about Tilly wanting to switch beds. It was Tilly's quarters first. Why wouldn't she have the side she wanted all along? I thought it was other way around.
No, it was Tilly's quarters first. Michael was assigned to Tilly's quarters way back in season one. And it was a whole thing because she said, I'm just trying to figure out how to tell you you're on my bed because I have special hypoallergenic needs for that bed.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that bit at all either. I agree with you. I was like, she already had the bed she wanted. That was established back in season one. And after they became friends, I have no idea why Michael would have taken her bed. I think they said sides, though, not bed.
Yeah.
But again, if those were her quarters to begin with, then she would have had the bed on the side that she wanted. So that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Donna from Florida is next. She says, not good enough. No one on the crew says, hey, Burnham's mom is back. Lots of unanswered questions.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Brian from Colorado says, did Vulcan have oceans all over it? If so, is that new? Yeah, it's like, it always seemed to be a desert planet, at least from what I remember.
More desert-like, anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe it's like Arizona or something.
Maybe they terraformed a little bit. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. And Will from SoCal says, Lieutenant Nielsen doesn't have a first name yet. Something smells. Oh. I suppose that's true.
Lieutenant Nelson has a first name. We just don't know what it is.
I don't know. I don't know Reese's first name. He may have one, but I don't know it.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. LT from NC says, the irony that the Romulans were wanting to stay with the Federation while the Vulcans wanted to go. This seemed very much like a return to our experiences from Enterprise, where the Vulcans were as much a roadblock as they were allies.
Yeah.
That's
that fair. Is astute.
Yeah. I'll get to that in my own. All right. Since Clint asked earlier, yes, I have a few issues about Tilly being XO, and it has nothing to do with Tilly per se, just the fact that it is just not done in a rank-structured environment. The first officer is the one that sees to a lot of the day-to-day business of the ship, and rank matters. It doesn't matter how much of a hotshot she is or how capable she is as a science team officer. She is an O-1. Sure, it is a feel-good moment, and I do like seeing Tilly rise to the occasion, but the pragmatist part of me knows that the only way she'd get that billet otherwise would be if every other officer above her was dead or in sick bay. I wanted to avoid the Harry Kim Wesley analogy, but there it is.
Yep.
See? Thanks, LT, for backing me up. The only way that she would get that is if everybody else above her were dead.
Yep. Yeah, it's like I would have appreciated it. I mean, at least she was made acting first officer and not.
Still.
Not, yeah, it would have seemed more appropriate to call her assistant to the first officer or something like that. You know,
That's not really a thing, I don't think.
No, I know it's not.
So.
Or assistant to the captain or something like that. Ship's counselor.
No, that's going to be Culber.
Yeah, I know.
See? Thank you, LT. You make me feel so much better for my rant, even though you put it in hold your horses, not nose. Oh, my gosh. All right. Anyway, finally, he says, I didn't dislike it, but I have some questions on how Mom Burnham became a ninja nun. Isn't that as much of a leap as the questions on how Michael got to be the magic human on Vulcan? Maybe more so with the Romulans. I can totally see it, though, with the Co-op Milot, because they are very open. So they would be very candid with her about whether or not we think you can do this.
Yeah.
This makes me question, though, exactly how long has her mother been permanently in this future timeline, as in not jumping back and forth?
21 years.
21 years. Oh, did they say that? I missed it.
Well, because her anchor point was 20 years before, I thought. So
that doesn't matter. They jumped the exact number of years forward that she was. They adjusted for that.
Possibly. I don't know.
Not possibly. That's truth. You can take my word for it. They said they made the adjustments for that time jump because she jumped 950 years in the future. They jumped 930 years.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
I know I'm right.
Okay.
That does not explain the laws of temporal dynamics being what they are, how long she's been in this timeline, though.
Right. But I mean, there could have been something to explain. Like, there was a 1 year difference between Burnham entering and Discovery entering. So maybe there was quite a bit more. I don't know, but yeah,
that's what I'm saying. I feel like she should have been there for a long time before they got there, and I want to know exactly how long she had been in that timeline permanently, because I mean, honestly, it's confusing anyway, because we don't really know specifically exactly how many years she's been jumping back and forth.
Right.
For her, it could have, I mean, time is relative, right? So for her, it could have been decades.
Right.
Not just 20 years. It's 20 years for Burnham.
Well, plus she's been there long enough to become Quat Malat. And
exactly. Exactly my point. You don't just do that in a year.
Right.
Especially to become, I mean, you could learn absolute candor in a year, sure. But to be an actual ninja nun, no, you can't just learn that in a year. Sorry. Doesn't happen.
Yeah. And we still don't get to see an actual Quat Malat get ninja. You know, because like technically, what's his name? I wanted to say Lenore. I know that's wrong. Elnor.
Elnor.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Elnor wasn't technically a Quat Malat. He was.
Because he was a boy.
Right.
Which meant he never could be.
Right.
But they taught him everything they know. So he was excellently proficient in his ninja skills. And since they only used absolute candor, that's how he spoke as well. But I don't know. I can understand how she would become a Co-op Milot, because it doesn't seem like, I mean, for one thing, they're not really that Romulan in the general sense of how Romulans act. So to me,
It
makes more sense that they would be more accepting of outsiders becoming part of their rank rather than Vulcans, honestly.
Right. I would agree.
But yeah, I've always understood that Vulcans do not lack emotion. They just control their emotion.
Right.
So when they say we may not ever understand love, I don't really get that, because they do love. They just show it differently. So that to me, I think, was a bit of a failure in the episode, because it's always been my understanding that they, love is the wrong word, prize logic over emotion, but not that they don't have emotion, that they suppress it or bury it, if you will.
Yeah.
It comes out in certain instances. For example, the Ponfar.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. Vulcans have emotions that are so deep that they repress them because
they lead to terrible things in their past.
Right. Right.
That's what they've said in the show. It's canon. Right. All right. Carry on.
West from Minnesota. The whole scene, say yes. It felt too brief, and Reno is definitely lacking here. I wonder what she would have said. It was good, though, just not good enough. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I agree that it felt out of place without Reno. She should have been in that scene. They worked together a lot. And I already kind of said all this, but I thought Giorgio would have been nice in there to have a little quip. And she'd
like
been on
something
so many,
like, I'm still not taking orders from you.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think it seems like they would have been better off just, you know, having her there, or, you know, maybe next week they'll have her just pop up and say, oh, sorry, I missed that say yes thing, but I agree, go for it or whatever. But they have worked together a lot. So, because a lot of times whenever like Stamets is working with her, it's Stamets, Tilly, and Reno. So,
Yeah.
You know.
Mike from Arizona says, Michael's mother survived? How does she even land? I'm not fully buying Michael's mother being a member of Co-op Milot. I need more backstory on this one. I think this could have easily been a two-parter. Yeah, I agree.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for our listener, Hold Your Horses. Do you have any additional Hold Your Horses?
I do.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure, and I'm hoping these are not no's yet, because I'm hoping that we find out more when we get more information about the burn. But what happened to the dilithium recrystallizers? Shouldn't they have been able to maintain the dilithium supply despite its scarcity? So why? I mean, so let me back up. Tarina says that the scarcity was caused by the enormity of the Federation. That didn't make any sense to me whatsoever, because the Federation isn't the only entity in the universe who uses dilithium.
That's true.
There is also, I mean, I guess at this point in time, we can't say the Romulan Empire because they were part of Vulcan and they were destroyed anyway. But there are the Cardassians, the Klingons.
Yeah, we still haven't seen any of them yet, especially the Klingons.
Yeah. So there aren't every other planet or whatever in the world in the universe who uses dilithium for space travel. So I just don't buy that it's the enormity of the Federation that causes the scarcity of dilithium. because what happened to the dilithium recrystallizers? So even if dilithium were a scarce resource, shouldn't they have been able to maintain the dilithium that they had? I don't know.
I think that is true, but you wouldn't be able to, you could recrystallize the dilithium that you had, but you can't recrystallize the lithium that you didn't have, like for new ships, for example.
Right. But why is it scarce in the first place?
Reasons. Well, okay. Probably because it had been mined, you know, like all the supplies had kind of dwindled up.
So this is supposed to be a similarity to
fracking or something.
Yeah, I was going to say the natural gas or oil and gas industry or something. I don't even know what this stuff is and where it's found. But, and the whole recrystallizing thing doesn't make any sense. The whole burn doesn't make any sense because I don't know how crystals explode. Yeah. I don't know how crystals are this make warp drive capable. I don't know. None of that stuff makes any sense to me. I don't get the science. But the Federation being as large as it was does not explain why it's scarce, because they're not the only. It might have been scarce for the Federation, but apparently the burn affected everyone, not just the Federation, because now it's scarce all over everywhere.
Yeah.
So there might have been other entities, organizations, what have you, that had access to the lithium, but I don't know. This whole, they're just not doing a very good job, I think, of explaining this particular part of the past.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I don't think it would be easy to, but.
No, but I kind of think it's because maybe they didn't figure it out all the way.
Beyond that, I don't have anything extra.
Oh, I have one more.
Okay.
I don't understand why, if her mother is supposed to be her advocate, and why didn't she explain all these blind spots to her before she went in? Like she says to her, you're going in with a lot of blind spots. Well, if you're my advocate, why don't you tell me?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point.
I mean, I guess the Kowat Malat are not supposed to have any ulterior motives. That's why they serve as this function. But I feel like I'm like, if she wants her to succeed, then why is she not, like, I don't know, helping her succeed more?
Yeah. Yeah, she could have done a little more, I think. I think it was all to draw out the truth. But
maybe, but I don't feel like it was necessarily necessary to ambush her in the middle of it like that. Like, she pointed out that she was going to have some issues, but then didn't tell her what they would be beforehand. So right. I'm kind of like, what is, that doesn't seem like someone who wants to be an advocate for you.
Yeah.
At least that's kind of what I think.
Okay. So that's it for our Hold Your Horses. We do have quite a bit of feedback this week as well. So let's open hailing frequencies for the second time. All right. So we have three voicemails. So this show has a total of five because we had two from last week that we didn't play. Jeff X-Force 11 is first.
Hello, Brian, Ruthie, and Star Trek fans. This is Jeff X-Force 11 leaving my feedback about Unification 3. This was a very character-driven episode of where we got insight into Burnham and who she is, and I loved the ties that we got because of the Picard prequel novel and even some of the movement within Picard the series. I like that it drew those things in and we got to see a future based on that. I also really, really enjoyed the Tilly wrestling with becoming number one. And I thought it was a good way to do it. And I'm looking forward to seeing her grow into this role along with the help of her crew. I think she's a heart that the crew needs as a number one. And I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. All right, those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 is out.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff X-Force 11, for your voicemail. And listening to your voicemail reminded me of something I wanted to say, which I'll say right here. It's fitting. The credit, with the theme music and all that, we see that one part where the communicators, change into these new style communicators, and we see one with four pips in the middle, one with three pips on the left, and one with a single pip on the right. I think that's the order. Well, I think now we get who it was, which we kind of did before. We figured it was probably Burnham, Saru, and Tilly. But now we get why Tilly's there, because she is the first officer, which we still don't get. But anyway, it explains it more to me. But like I said, I would like to see Tilly get a promotion out of this, like at least boost her up to lieutenant junior grade or something. I would think that she deserves it, especially if Saru makes her more than acting first officer. You have anything to add?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, that is it for Jeff's feedback. Thank you so much. Let's move on to Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Brian, Ruthie, and possibly LT from NC, a.k.a. LC. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 3, Episode 7. Headline, Michael Burnham is coming. Most Star Trek fans are somewhat nostalgic. So, for those, this was a very nice episode, putting in Leonard Nimoy, getting a connection to the Picard series with the Quat'Malat, seeing Burnham's mother back went me a little bit too quick. On the other hand, it was just the other way around, as you would expect. You would expect that Michael Burnham was looking for her mother and found her mother some way on a kind of quest, taking several episodes, and now mother just walked in. Sometimes it's good to do it in a different way than everybody expects. I got used to the hookup between Book and Michael in the meanwhile. What also was very unexpected, but you could anticipate it a little bit, that Tilly would become number one, but still, as an ensign, a bit too much. Very nice, of course, that the whole crew is behind her and support that, but still, feels a bit unreal. But I already thought that when I thought about the possibility it could be Tilly. So now it just happens. But we will see what it will bring us. Not unexpected, of course, is that Michael will stay under Discovery. Well, perhaps story-wise it would or could be nice that she wouldn't. But on the other hand, then we have no interaction or not that much between her and the rest of the crew. And that would be bad, I think, for the series. Or perhaps even impossible for the series. So, in conclusion, they went towards a certain path, but they didn't follow up on that path. And, well, would have been perhaps a nicer idea to let Michael Burnham become a rogue captain, and everybody follows this rogue captain, including Saru. That would be something different. More in a way like following Captain Lorca, although the crew didn't know he was a Terran. That was all for now. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Interesting.
Thank you, Fred from the Netherlands, with your voicemail. You make a bunch of good points here. Michael Burnham is coming. I would have expected the search for her mom to go multiple episodes like you, and her showing up there was very unexpected, to say the least. Kind of did like, huh? For me. And we both agree that it does seem implausible for Tilly to be number one. So yeah. I like that rogue commander thing, you kind of rogue captain thing you mentioned, which you said even Saru would follow her, which would be kind of weird. And the whole thing about Saru, some people have mentioned this so far about the idea that Saru would leave to maybe continue relations with Vulcan, or sorry, Navarre. I don't know. I don't see him doing that. I mean, maybe for a period of time, but yeah, I could see him maybe becoming an ambassador for the Federation or something like that. But I don't know. It seems like his talents are best in as a captain right now. So, but we'll see.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think I could see it, honestly. I'm not quite sure he's cut out to be captain, to be quite frank.
Yeah, so then it ends up with Captain Tilly and First Officer Burnham. I don't know. That just seems weird to me, too.
It does seem weird, which is why Tilly shouldn't be the first officer. Oh, my goodness.
All right. You have anything else to add about Fred's voicemail?
No, I think that's it.
All right. So we've got one more voicemail, and this is from Trey from Pittsburgh.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Ruthie. It's Trey from Pittsburgh. I just finished watching Unification 3, or is it Unification Part 3? Not quite sure about that. I'm actually on my way to work, and I do watch TV while I drive. Please don't judge. But I'll tell you what, this Discovery is, again, one of my favorite shows. This episode particularly, I like how they dive deep into the new Vulcan culture, or Romulan culture. They, you know, refer to the Kwatmulot from Star Trek Picard. They're bringing those two shows now together. They're, you know, with Leonard Nimoy's Spock and also, you know, current Discovery Spock, all in the same episode, combining those two. So, you know, it satisfies us Trekkies from before and creates the Trekkies of today. Couple things I just want to mention after listening to the podcast. You guys had asked how you guys are the only podcast I listen to. It's because while I'm at work, I'm always listening to Star Trek in the background. I must have listened to / watched Star Trek Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and Next Generation. I'm not exaggerating, hundreds and hundreds of times each episode. And finally, I switched to Back to the Future and listened to Back to the Future for months on end. And I just needed something different. So I started searching through the podcasts and found another Star Trek. And your voices are, quite honestly, just the two that I can stand to listen to for my 10 to 12 hour shifts. They're comforting. I feel like I have my Star Trek friends around, and trust me, I don't have many Star Trek friends in real life. I have friends though. But anyway, again, I really appreciate all you guys are doing. And just one other comment or two. I just want to remind everybody that Curzon Dax was a Klingon. So even, I mean, except for the pilot episode of Deep Space Nine, but so the fact that this big ordeal of, oh, it's a human, and I mean, a Klingon. So that's what I have to say about that. But thanks again for letting me ramble. I appreciate you guys, and I can't wait to hear more of what you guys have to offer. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much, Trey, for your voicemail. Good to hear from you again. I think it's your second. So anyway, I think it is Unification 3, and I think that's the only example of them using that kind of style of naming stuff in a TNG era episode. And I wondered if they did that to kind of match the movies, you know, because it was kind of tied into the Undiscovered Country, if you recall.
I do recall.
Yeah. But it was like Unification and then Unification 2. And then, of course,
they also mentioned that in the Ready Room.
Yeah.
It was part of the trivia.
Yeah. I can't judge you, by the way. I used to do the same thing. I used to watch TV myself. In fact, I used to watch episodes of Discovery when I had a long commute on the freeway. So but yeah, I used to do it. My main thing I used to do was to listen to it as it would play, but You know, you can get the episodes like saved to your device and play them to your heart's content. So that's how I used to like watch an episode like 14, 15 times. I could do that because most of the times that I would watch it, I would just be watching it on my phone and it would just be playing, you know, in the background kind of. So, but now that as funny things go, now that I work from home 100% of the time, I don't have the easiness of doing that anymore. So anyway, but thanks for finding us.
Yeah, we're glad.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if it was exactly what you meant, but I think you were referring to Adira and her being human. Curzon, although he had a distinct relationship with the Klingons, he was not a Klingon himself. He was just a had a deep relationship with Kang, Kor, and Koloth.
Wasn't he the ambassador to the Klingon Empire?
Yes, I believe. I believe you're correct. And so he had a blood oath with those three because each of their sons had been slain or something. So he had a blood oath to kill the albino, which we still didn't know what the albino was, if he was Klingon or something else, because you couldn't exactly tell for sure what he was. But
yeah.
All right.
So close, but not quite.
All right. So that's it for our voicemail. So on to written feedback. Comic Geek Kev is first. He says, this show, how do they keep knocking it out of the park week after week? Even the bad episodes are better than most shows. And this was not a bad episode. Certainly low on the action, non-existent actually, but we definitely got some advancement on the burn mystery. I'm really not a huge fan of a lot of exposition, but the writing is usually so good on this show, it's worth it. Yeah, I agree. After watching last week's Ready Room regarding the personal transporters, they make a lot more sense. I should have watched that before submitting my feedback. And I should have put this in the previous episode's feedback. Didn't realize that. Oh, well.
Ah, well. What's that saying? To err is human. All right. Next, we have Brian from Colorado, who says, season 3 has been very good so far. I think it has overall been more like traditional Star Trek with positive messages and role models. I very much appreciate how it has evolved and improved over the previous seasons. The new Starfleet headquarters and Admiral Vance are wonderful additions to the show. The Discovery refit looks great with its programmable matter and other new technology that is no longer hampered by canon. I do agree with some of the criticisms mentioned on the podcast about weak writing with respect to contrived reasons for Burnham to always participate in away missions. To be fair, I think that was a listener who gave us that feedback, although we didn't disagree. Last week's episode, Scavengers, was a low point for me in the season due to several really groan-worthy one-liners by Giorgio, and due to the reveal of the Burnham book romantic relationship that we were all dreading. I did smile at the self-sealing stem bolts reference, though. Thankfully, this week's episode more than made up for the disappointment from last week. Well, I say speak for yourself, because not everyone was dreading that romantic relationship.
I would agree. Will from SoCal is next. He says, Unification 3 lives up to its name. Saw reunited with family, history, and culture, which was great to see. Picard and Spock were acknowledged for their roles for allowing this unification. Now imagine Michael Burnham having a captain like Picard instead of Saru. Now the Federation has a chance to reunite due to Michael. The whole crew seeing Tilly to say yes to the dress was racked. Michael Burnham having a captain like Picard, that's an interesting thought.
Well, she definitely thrived better under Captain Pike, so...
Yeah, that's true.
But then circumstances were a little different with Captain Pike. I mean, she didn't just jump into the future and spend a year by herself.
Right.
Although she did have other issues, so I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, but she didn't do anything insubordinate to Pike last season. She basically fell right in line, you know. But she also wasn't first officer, worth saying. She was just chief science officer. So,
but she also didn't jump into the future and spend a year by herself.
Right.
Thinking that she would never see her crew again. So it's hard to say.
I agree. Yeah. But anyway, I think Pike is still a better captain than Saru is. So Saru, as we've said, I think is still learning.
Yeah. He still has some issues to work out. All right. Next, we have Mike from Arizona, who says, "This was a fun and riveting episode to watch. So many references and the Spot cameo. Those alone got a rating of 9 from me. First, I'm glad to see Tilly get the promotion. I know it is unusual, but not unheard of. Kelvin Kirk promoted from cadet to first officer."
Oh, there we go. Hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. But I do think that was also a different situation. I don't know. Was he promoted to first officer?
Yeah, I believe so. Although that whole thing was a little weird anyway.
It was weird. I just remember he kept sitting in the chair. Anyway, I do wish the Admiral had placed a temporary acting first officer from the current Starfleet ranks on board as part of their transition process first.
Yeah.
Me too.
And, you know, maybe they will get someone, you know, we'll see. Maybe Lieutenant Willow will become the permanent first officer until she gets killed or something.
Oh, great.
I don't know about that. Okay, so.
Well, I do think they should have picked someone from the 32nd century. But anyway, that is neither here nor there because they didn't. So it seems to me Saru is offering her the role of acting first officer more than just a lack of experience. I think he is hoping Michael will come around, and most likely by the end of the season, she will. I don't know. That's all for this week's episode. Have a great week. Thanks.
All right. So that's it for our feedback. So let's move on to other notes. I don't have any other notes. So the only thing I wrote down in here was already talked about, the USS Yelchin. So.
All right, then. I do have other notes. I forgot to mention, I completely love the, I love the interplay between Sonequa Martin-Green and Sonya Son, because they are both so great. And especially their faces are so expressive. It's another reason why I love Sonequa in this scene with her mother, with Michael and her mother, because you can just see when she keeps looking back at her mother, like, are you serious right now? I mean, she doesn't need any words. Her facial acting is all you need, because her mother is basically just flaying open her soul, and she keeps looking at her like, WTF, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
So I thought that those were great. I love them. And when Gabrielle says, based on what you're not telling them, you cannot be trusted. I was like, whoa, not pulling any punches, are we, Mom? Let me see if I had anything else. I liked the bookends of the episode with Michael and Book, honestly. And I forgot to mention in my no or hold your horses, but really kind of a no, I just find it very unlikely, highly unlikely, that the three founding member planets of the Federation have all left the Federation.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me at all. And yet there are still humans in charge of Starfleet / maybe the Federation. I don't know. But that doesn't seem very plausible, I guess, to me. So I don't know. That's really more for the whole future, the whole season in the future, I guess, because I just don't I guess I need more than a passing reference to, oh yeah, Earth is no longer in the Federation, and the Federation headquarters aren't on Earth anymore.
I would like to see them
say what?
I would like to them to cover who is left in the Federation. We know that there are 38 worlds, but are there any of the worlds that we know, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, so the three founding member planets are what? Vulcan, Earth, and Andor, right?
And Teller. Which we've never seen a lot of the Tellarites, but yeah, they're supposedly part of it.
They were an original founding member?
Yes.
Okay, so there are four founding member planets, and we don't know anything about them, but three of those four have left the Federation because the Andorians have formed the Emerald Chain.
Right.
The Vulcans bounced, and Earth is outro.
Right.
So that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and yet many of the seems like it's still largely humans that are in Starfleet and whatnot. So,
right. So they're in Starfleet, but they're not what, members of Earth, I guess. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't get it. I don't know if that's necessarily a no, but it's kind of a no. It's kind of a no, kind of a hold your horses. That's it. That's all I got.
Okay. I actually, in looking at, I'll just mention this. We don't do the references anymore, but just a little bit more detail about this Nevarre thing. So the name comes from the 1968 fanzine called Spockanalia, when fan writer Dorothy Jones came up with the word Nevarre, and it didn't have the apostrophe in it, which she claimed was a Vulcan word that referred to two forms. And this is not the first time that this word made it into canon. Apparently, the Enterprise episode Shadows of Pajem, one of the NX-01 encountered a ship, Vulcan ship named Nevarre. So this is kind of using that on that. And something I hadn't even thought of until I think my last viewing, they didn't even realize that Romulans were related to the Vulcans, because at that time in Balance of Terror, the TOS episode, they mentioned that the Romulan War was, negotiations were done over subspace, and that they had never seen a Romulan, right? So, that would have been 8 years later. So, 2258, Discovery and crew don't even know that the Romulans are descendants of Vulcan, right? So,
I'm impressed that Admiral Vance can keep track of what they knew and didn't know. It's like he has the Star Trek canon book in his head. Because certainly wouldn't necessarily know what, I wouldn't have in my head what knowledge people had 1,000 years ago, necessarily. I mean, of course, sure, there are some things that I would know automatically that they didn't know. But generally speaking, I can't say, I mean, especially for a record keeping, like once you get into the record keeping portion of civilization, which wasn't really 1,000 years ago, I think that it would be harder and harder to know, oh, wait, you didn't know that?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because it comes to a certain point in time where you kind of, it feels like all knowledge is now, you know?
Yeah.
So it would be hard for me to know what someone of a certain time frame or age or whatever would know.
True.
I think that's a product of the information age, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah. We're also, I guess, one other thing to mention is that Kirsten Beyer has been involved now on both Discovery and of course, on Picard, because she is a co-creator. I went to go back to see, did she write the episode where the Kwat Malat actually show up? No, she didn't. But she was obviously on staff for that. She wrote the episode I think the episode that largely had Seven of Nine for the most, Stardust City Rag, I think, or Star...
Yeah, Stardust City Rag is the name of an episode. I don't know if that's the one you're talking about.
It is. Yeah, she wrote that. That was directed by Jonathan Frakes, that one. So Michael Chabon was the person who wrote Absolute Candor. So anyway. All right. So that's it for our feedback and notes. So let's move on to shipwide announcements. On the Ready Room this week was Sonequa Martin Green. So I think that's the first time that she's been on, you know, this version of the Ready Room with Will Wheaton as host. And they also went into more of the, I think, more of the costumes of like the new Starfleet uniforms from the 32nd century, the ones that Discovery. What's that?
I said they did.
Yeah. Not explaining why everyone didn't get one, but
yeah.
But yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
They just talked about the new ones.
Yeah. On to news, and we want to again thank Wes Huntington for collecting these for us. Michelle Yeoh has been named one of the BBC's top 100 influential women of 2020. So that's cool. Want to look at that to get a little more detail on that. And I guess they have them kind of categorized into knowledge, leadership, creativity, and identity. And in the case of Michelle Yeoh, she is listed under creativity. So anyway.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Evan Evergora, who plays Elnor in Picard, is the latest actor to say that January 2021 is when season 2 will finally go into production. I believe Michelle Hurd said something similar, which is a delay of about 7 months, of course, because of COVID-19. It was originally planned to go back into production in June. And he also said that he would like to spar with Worf, whether or not that will happen or not. And last bit of news, Simon & Schuster, the publisher of the Star Trek novel since 1979, has been sold to Penguin Random House for $2 billion. So Viacom CBS was the owner of Simon & Schuster, and now that's going to Penguin Random House. So I don't know how that's going to, you know, affect any Star Trek novels. Are they still going to continue making Star Trek novels? This also puts the Star Trek and Star Wars novels under the same banner for the first time ever. So, I don't know. I don't want to see crossing the streams.
I don't either.
I'd rather keep them separate. I did like personally that Simon & Schuster was owned by Viacom CBS because there was a synergy there that existed, you know, back in the day, because you know, Paramount Communications or Viacom, when the original version of Viacom, they were all under the same, you know, banner, so that made things easy in terms of licensing. And you know, we used to get so many novels of Star Trek. Whether that's gonna, you know, continue to happen, I don't know. So I don't know if it's a bad thing or a good thing.
I don't know. I wonder why they sold it off.
Yeah, I think it, you know, they did something similar, say, with the parks. You know, the parks were originally, you know, part of Viacom, and they got sold off while I think it was sometime after the breakup of the you know, turning into Viacom and CBS. I think Viacom had the parks and they sold them off to Cedar Fair, which owns like Cedar Point and a lot of other parks, but yeah, I don't know. That was kind of weird. Anyway, so we'll see how this ends up affecting the Star Trek novels. We do have ratings for Star Trek Discovery on CBS during the ratings for Season 1, Episode 8, Si Vis Pacem Parabellum. Hopefully I said that right. And these are what is called preliminary ratings. And what that means is there are usually ratings that are given out like right away, and then there are ratings that are given after they adjust certain things. And because of the Thanksgiving Day holiday, they haven't released the Thursday final ratings, which include cable. And these do not. They're just network. It got a 0.2 in the 18 to 49 with 1.507 million viewers. That is down from last week's 0.2. Well, same, actually. But 1.850 million last week. And in the Parrot Analytics, Discovery is down 3 spots this week, going from number 3 to number 6, despite going from 35.7 average last week to 36.0 times the average show this week. So it's weird that several other shows kind of leapfrogged over them this week. So higher demand, but lower in the top 10. All right, so that's it for our news and whatnot. So Ruthie, why don't you take it on and tell people how to send in their feedback.
Alrighty. If you want to connect with us, you can submit your theories and feedback by going to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. You can call 216-232-6146 and leave us a voicemail. You can send us an email by typing in Star Trek Discovery at talkthroughmedia.com. Or you can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMPodcasts. The deadline for Discovery Season 3, Episode 8 will be back to our regular day and time, which is will be Friday, December 4th, 2020 at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 0000 UTC.
Connect with us. Our Twitter is Star Trek TTM. And also our Instagram is Star Trek TTM. A great way you can support us is by sharing our posts on Twitter and Facebook. Go to facebook.com/talkthroughmedia and you can write a review there and like the network. When we share there on Facebook, you can then share those episodes out. But share us on Twitter as well. If you don't already subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice. And if your particular podcast application allows you to do a review, it's been a long time since we got a review. I think October 1st is our last review on anything. That was via Stitcher. So help us out by giving us a review. You can also help support the Star Trek podcast by becoming a member of our Patreon. And at this point, we'll be doing another episode. We had to skip November because of everything else going on, but we will be doing an episode in December. We would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCollum, Lawrence Todd, James Robbins, Fred Petrie, Kyle McAdams, Kim Vogley, Brian Shiro, Christoph Lechleitner, Lee Radke, Aaron Mays, Michael Carrier, Stephen Chambers, Kevin Lyle, Jeff Gentry, and Jeff Bayako. All of our new episodes are on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media and remember to subscribe and click that bell to get notified when we have new videos. Those videos go out first before the podcast does. Although this past week, I was able to get them, I think, I think I got the episode within an hour of getting it on YouTube. So, but sometimes it's a lot longer than that. Everything that Talk Through Media does can be found on the Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed, which contains the Rebinge DS9 podcast, The Walking Dead Talk Through, and Let's Talk Through. Our next episode of the Star Trek Discovery podcast will be covering Season 3, Episode 8, titled The Sanctuary. It is written by Kenneth Lynn and Brendan Schultz and directed by Jonathan Frakes. But we don't have a description yet.
But we did have trailers.
Yeah, we do have trailers.
And the trailers indicated that it was going to be something to do with Georgiou.
And also that that they found the source of the burn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Culber and Georgiou have an interesting interaction. I'm
right.
excited.
Right. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.